Raising highly capable kids is our topic for this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Mike Haley of Focus on the Family. And now Raising Highly Capable Kids is actually, as I understand it, a project within Focus on the Family. Mike, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Sure. Okay, so go ahead and tell us all about this new venture within Focus on the Family, Raising Highly Capable Kids.
Yeah, so Raising Highly Capable Kids, it's a 13-week evidence-based parenting program, and it is it's values-based. It's not faith-based because it gives the church an opportunity to take good programming into the public sector. So we're in public schools, we're in Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, homeless women's shelters. I mean, you name it, anywhere you've got a group of parents that want to learn what the research says about raising kids that are going to be healthy, caring, and responsible adults. And so it's a train-the-trainer model. We go out into communities. We give 18 grants a year into underserved communities, and we help them launch the program wherever they have a group of parents that are coming together to want to learn more and help their kids achieve, not only in life, but also academically.
Okay, so go ahead and give us, you know, one particular example of how this works, you know, in one particular setting that you're working at. I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, so, I mean, our curriculum is built in partnership with an organization known as the Search Institute. And the Search Institute has been around since the late 50s, and they've done decades of research with over 5 million young people. And they've come up with 40 essential building blocks that every child needs to be successful. And those 40 essential building blocks are what are called the 40 developmental assets. And so simply stated, the more of those assets a child has in his or her life, the less likely they are to engage in high-risk behaviors, the more likely they are to engage in positive behaviors, and we're going to see an increase in those children's grade point average. Let me give you one example. So out of those 40 developmental assets, if a child is missing most of those assets, if out of that 40 they have 0 to 10, kids in that category typically score a 2.1 GPA. But if kids have 31 to 40 of those 40 developmental assets, kids in that category typically score a 3.3 GPA. So there's strong empirical data that supports that the more of these assets a child has in his or her life, the better that child is going to do in life as well as academically.
Wow, that's fantastic. Okay, go ahead and tell us some of those building blocks that you're talking about, the 40 building blocks.
I mean, so like I said, there's 40 of them, but it's things like family support, service to others.
Okay, well, wait. Let's stop with family. Let's start with that. Is there a difference between, father and mother being at home versus a single parent house? Obviously there is. As a Christian perspective, of course there is.
There's definitely things that a mother can teach a child that a father can't. A father can teach a child that a mother can't. But, you know, we work with many, many single parents, especially in the underserved communities that we're in. And mm-hmm. So we just really encourage those parents to be this type of support that a child needs. You know, a child just needs one person that believes in them to be able to excel. Mm. So, the family support is definitely something we help these parents to grow in as well.
Okay, so I so rudely interrupted you as you were talking about some of the building blocks, but the first one was parents that care about their children. What were some of the other building blocks?
So, for instance, asset number 9 is service to others. So, you know, we encourage these families to go out and teach their families to serve others, that's a strong correlative factor and shows, you know, data that's going to increase a person's community awareness. It's going to build their self-esteem, things like that. So that's one of the other assets. Another one is resistance skills, where, you know, we can teach kids to resist peer pressure and how to avoid dangerous situations, kind of how to say no. And so, you know, those are just a few of the 40 assets. And so we really help with the parents to look at, you know, where are the areas that your family is struggling right now with some of these assets? How do you build them into your own life? How do you give them to your kids? And then how do you model that behavior so that your children will catch on to those assets as well?
And how did you get involved in all this? I mean, this sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Well, we were doing some community work in Santa Ana, California, which is a very underserved kind of mostly Hispanic community. And they just said, we need some help for parents. And so we put this program together, and it's really grown and morphed. We hired a curriculum writer that wrote it, and then we went through we had to hire an outside organization that tracked the curriculum or evaluated the curriculum in three communities for over a year. So that we could come back as evidence-based, because anytime you're in the public schools, they are not allowed to spend their federal appropriations on any program that is not evidence-based. So our program proved, and our program frankly came out with pretty flying colors, we're 21% more effective than the top 200 parenting programs. So it's done really well and has been, you know, very respected, and a lot of people are loving what we do. And like I said, we have 18 grants a year that we give out into these underserved communities, and the last couple of years we've had a waiting list.
Wow. Okay, when you say evidence-based, describe exactly what you mean and how that works.
Yeah, so evidence-based, what that means is if a parent goes through our curriculum, if they attend 10 or more of the 13 weekly sessions, what are the expected outcomes that you can see with that parent? And so those have been empirically tested, and it shows that if people stay true to our program and run the way that it's supposed to, there are expected outcomes that you will see not only in the lives of the parents that go through it, but then in the lives of the children as well. And so one of the things that it showed is there's, you know, of those 40 assets, there's 8 different asset categories, and it showed that parents increased their knowledge and their skill level of all 8 asset categories. And so that was an important finding, because that's what we built the curriculum around, was helping parents be aware of what are these 40 developmental assets. But it's one thing to know them, but it's another thing to increase someone's skill level where they're able to take that knowledge and assimilate it into everyday life. And so we not only increased the parents' knowledge, but we also increased their skill level. So that was a pretty powerful finding as well.
Is God allowed in any way to be a part of this, or is this something, because you're going into the public school square, explain how that works.
Yeah. So we really believe that it's a creative way for the church to get back and get involved in the public schools. You know, like we say, God's been taken out of the schools. But one of my Christian principals said, listen, I've had to fight that mentality, because the reality is Christ tells me that he is within me. So when I step on that campus, he is back in that public school. And so if we can get the faith-based community involved in that public school, we had one pastor that ran this program for 25 parents. He never preached the gospel once. He just ran the curriculum. And the last night of class, one of the parents said to him, Pastor, you're a pillar in our community. We know you're busy. We know, you know, why would you do this for us? And he was able to share his own story. And that night, all 25 of those parents prayed to receive Christ. And so that's the type of thing that happens. When you go in and you serve people and you partner with them and do life with them, they're going to ask you what's different about you. And that is what opens up the conversation. You know, you do have to be careful in the public schools. You can't preach, but you let your actions preach. And so it's a really creative, new, relevant way that we're seeing, you know, people introduced to the faith-based community.
Wow. Okay, so again, this program is called Raising Highly Capable Kids. And approximately how many communities is this being implemented in now?
Yeah, so we're in 180 communities around the country. We just celebrated our 10th year anniversary. We're in 29 different states, and we've ran 30,000 parents through the program already. And it's just continuing to grow. Our website is capablekids.com. If somebody wants to go in and look at what we have to offer and look at those 40 developmental assets. So, yeah, we're there. We'd love to partner with people in communities and bring this curriculum anywhere that we can.
And this even happens in what we could call dangerous neighborhoods?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're everywhere. Boys and girls clubs, YMCAs, homeless women's shelters. We're doing a launch at the Seattle Union Rescue Mission in Seattle. I mean, so literally anywhere you've got a group of parents that are, we have 6 moms doing it together in Starbucks. You know, so it's really anywhere you, and, you know, this information is not just for poor kids. All kids need these 40 developmental assets, but one of the hallmarks of our organization is that we give these grants and we go into underserved communities. Wow. So that's why I talk so much about underserved communities. But again, all children need these 40 developmental assets.
Yeah. Well, listen, we have about 3 or 4 minutes left, and you've mentioned 3 or 4 of the 40 building blocks, but I would like you to go ahead and just share all of them.
Okay. You know, so the first category is support. So there we talk about family support, right. Positive family communication, other adult relationships, which you and I know is like a mentor,
uh-huh.
A caring neighborhood, a caring school climate, and parent involvement in schooling. The next one is a community that values youth as resources, service to others, and safety. The next one is family boundaries, school boundaries, neighborhood boundaries, adult role models, positive peer influence, and high expectations. And then we talk about constructive use of time. So it's important that kids are involved in creative activities, youth programming. And then what's interesting is that asset number 19 is that the studies show that children that are involved in a religious community do better than children that are not. So that is actually one of the assets. And then asset number 20 is time at home. So that's just 20 of them right there. And then there's, you know, a whole nother 20 that are listed.
Sure. Hey, let me ask you a question. I mean, this may almost seem like a dumb question, but obviously cell phones and tablets and computers, these are tremendous tools. But there is a problem, I think, in terms of screen time. I even see this with my own little grandchildren. Where it's, you know, is this something positive or is this something destructive? And by the way, they are ages 7, 5, and 2. What are your thoughts on that, screen time and cell phones?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple things. I think that screen time can be used in a positive way if there's reading that's involved, if there's questions that are asked, if there's comprehension questions that are asked. But when a child sits on, you know, a device, for many hours a day, they're losing out on the social component that's so important within learning, you know, how to deal with others, how do you venture through conflict? How do you ask good quality questions? How do you get your needs met, you know, when you're in a public school? How do you make sure that your voice is heard? And so when a child is, you know, inundated with just social media, it can be a very dangerous thing if parents are not aware of it and are not stewarding that correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that maybe a child should not have, and this is going to be, you know, I mean this, though, maybe a child should not have a cell phone until they're at least 16, if not older, perhaps.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the kids have them when they're quite young, and parents are saying, you know, I want to be able to reach my child because of, you know, safety issues and things like that. But the parents don't turn around and don't put monitors on it. They also realize that when they're in a car, you know, if their kid's on the cell phone, they're going to be quiet. And so a lot of parents are unintentionally using it as kind of a distraction or a babysitter.
Yeah.
And so they just need to be very concerned about what's happening, the lessons that are being missed out in those conversations that we can have with our kids in the car, you know, before and after school or before and after an event. And so, you know, I get it. Parenting is hard. Parents are tired. But we just have to really work on being intentional, engaging, taking temperature checks of where our kids are at. You know, do they feel safe? Do they not feel safe? Are they being bullied at school? Are they not being bullied? Are they a bully? You know, and so these are the types of things that are missed out on when parents are not engaged.
Well, Mike, we're basically out of time, but I want to refer people to your website again. It's capablekids.com. Again, this is something launched by Focus on the Family. Mike Haley of Focus on the Family has been our guest for this particular segment. Thank you so much, Mike, and keep up the great work.
No problem. Thank you, and God bless.
Okay, God bless you, too.